Ken Lee, in charge of the Lort Radar, and Jack Walker, who was the engineer in charge of the acquisition aid, and myself. We were the first staff appointed, and we were on site about December 1960. And progressively, the station was still being installed with the PMG staff and Bendix and Western Electric contractors on site as well. And the equipment was being installed then.
And at that point, it was all working up to Project Mercury, which was happening...
Well, in 1961, in the first half, most of the staff, including the station director, were appointed, chaplain owner Frank Dawson, and the powerhouse was all up and running, and we were commuting daily from Perth, four people in a car, and all the staff were living in the metropolitan area of Perth, and we travelled daily.
Were people in Perth aware that Musho was there and that it was part of the space program?
I think there was quite a few articles in the West Australia in connection with the development of Musho, and the main contractor, Western Electric, man on site, was interviewed by the newspaper, and he lived in Cottesloe by himself for quite a long time. And there's another man from Bendix who was also on site, who lived in Perth and commuted with us as well. And a man came out from San Diego who was responsible for the acquisition aid, who was ex-US Navy, who also was stationed in Perth during this.
What sort of countryside was the tracking station in?
Well, it's all sand plain and just a low scrub, no real major trees, and it was just like beach sand with low scrubby bush. But because it was selected, it was a bombing range for Musho, for RAF PS aircraft, but we had line of sight to the ocean out to the west. And that was one of the major reasons why that location was acceptable and being so close to Perth for the staff to commute. Nobody lived on site except an Australian Federal policeman. He was living on site in a caravan and living a bit rough because he had to be on site all the time. And he lived in the caravan, including all the hot weather. So he did a marvellous job. Someone named Tim McQuaid, I don't know what happened when Musho closed with Tim, but he was there all the time that I was at Musho. He's an Irishman. And I believe he came from Woomera, where he had previously worked.
So when Musho built up, you had about 35 staff?
Altogether, and of course, their American people came out, like Cooper, the astronauts, and all the flight staff, when the manned flights were planned. So they were probably at Musho for a couple of weeks before they went back to the US after the flights were completed.
That included a flight surgeon. There was an RAAF doctor, Warren Bishop.
Yes, Warren Bishop was there on each of the flights. He came over from Adelaide. But we saw Scott Carpenter, Cooper, Dink Slayton, on the manned flights. They came to Perth, and we got to know them as well. We're all part of the worldwide team of 16 Mercury stations, and the closest one to us out in the west was an Indian Ocean ship, and then, of course, it was the African continent where there are other stations as well. Mm. And then Woomera on to the east, and then I think it was a station in Hawaii as well.
What kind of training did you have to do for Musho?
Well, it's all on-site training. We're all responsible for maintenance and organisation. So we maintained the equipment, and during the operations, we manned it. So we had overall responsibility from each section of the equipment that was there. In the acquisition team, there was Jack Walker, the engineer, myself, and Jack Moyer. The three of us made up the team, as Ken Lee and Don Blackman were the two persons responsible for the Lort Radar, which was in a semi-trailer attached to a fixed antenna at one end of the station.
And you had quite a bit of experience between you on your acquisition team.
Well, it was all new equipment that we had to learn all about to operate and maintain it. It was all new to all of us, but there was four people on station who were ex-Royal Australian Navy, including myself, and there were two ex technical senior people from the RAAF that joined the staff as well in the Gerry O'Connor and Gordon MacDonald. Ken Lee was ex-Royal Navy. Colin McNish was ex-Australian Navy. And Len Moore was ex-Australian Navy and myself.
Gus Pugh, he was...
He was the engineer who had come to us from the PNG and was responsible for all the communications in and out of Musa. At his right hand was Kevin Westbrook, who came from the PNG as well. A lot of simulations, and of course when the flights were planned, there were false starts and missions were aborted at the last minute. And yes, we went through all that, and they were long days because of the time difference between Cape Canaveral and ourselves. Meant that we worked all night whenever there was a flight on. It usually finished 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning after the third orbit. They were long days, nights.
You supported unmanned flights before John Glenn flew.
Yes. Yes, we covered the unmanned flights. We weren't involved with the downrange flights, of course, but we were with the orbital flights with the Bucky and so on, unmanned. This is a period over 3 years.
So John Glenn's flight must have been something of great excitement for the general public.
It certainly was. Perth was most excited about eliminating the whole city, and also the BP refinery, the discharge of excess gases just south of Perth. And when John Glenn came over, he looked down and he could see the whole area of Perth, and Gwinnard were all illuminated for him, and he could see it.
What was it like to acquire the spacecraft? You had manual controls on the acquisition antenna.
Yeah, we had the azimuth and elevation to just put the antennas in that direction, so we knew we were expected to come up over the horizon, and that was quite straightforward to lock onto it and complete that part of what it was doing.